I said this morning, I generally don't preach on meeting sermons. I'm breaking my rule. I want to talk about Martha this afternoon. So that was, I think, one of the two standout lessons that Josh presented last week. The one he presented Monday night about family will probably be the one that most of us remember for years. But the other sermon I've heard really stood out from the week was the one he presented about Martha. And the general point he made from that is certainly in the text that, you know, it's so easy to get distracted with good things that we forget about the better thing. And Josh reminded us we need to have our time and our attention focused on the better things. Excellent point from the text, and I'm by no means critiquing or changing anything from that text. Rather, what I want to try to do tonight is supplement it by talking about the other side of Martha. When we were getting our John class ready last year, I read stories about Martha that I just did not know. This is probably the story that you know Martha from. And I'm going to bring a couple of observations from that text in a moment. But I want to show you the other side of Martha and really show you why I think she is not a villain, but a hero of the text. The text, I think, really talks highly of Martha. And she's someone that's really to be commended for who she is and what she did. So let's talk about both sides of Martha. Let's review from last week. Luke chapter 10, verse 38. Luke 10, 38. Now as they went their way, Jesus entered a village. And a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving. And she went up to him and said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things. But one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her." So you'll notice the phrase that Josh really camped out on was verse 40. Martha was distracted with much serving. And indeed, I think that's a great reminder for all of us that it's so easy in our fast-paced, busy American culture just to get distracted, even perhaps by good things that we forget about the better things. What I'd like to do is read from the Gospel of John, and then at the end of the sermon, come back and review this text. I think if you read this text in light of what goes on in John, this text has a couple of just different meanings to it that really you'll pick up on. So let's go to the Gospel of John. Go to John 11. John chapter 11. John chapter 11. So in John 11, we read of the story of Lazarus, which is unique because this is the only gospel that mentions the resurrection of Lazarus. But we learn a lot about Martha from John 11 and John 12. Okay? John 11 and John 12. Jeff, do I need to get closer to the mic? Okay. I'll just say a bit closer to the mic. That's fine. Okay. Short joke, right? Zacchaeus? Yeah, I told Josh, you had to do the Zacchaeus sermon with a short preacher. You had to. Okay. Now, John 11, verse 1. "Now, a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha." Now stop here. Okay? Three important people you have to recognize: Mary, Martha, Lazarus. Who are they? We really don't have a lot of information about them. Okay? They're siblings, but beyond their sibling connections, we don't know a lot about them. Now, there is speculation that their father was Simon the leper. I'll give you these verses to hunt down in your own time. If you look at Matthew chapter 26, verse 6, and compare that with John chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, in one case it says Jesus went to the house of Simon the leper. The other case it says Jesus went to the house of Martha in Bethany. So many have thought from that then, Simon was the father, and his children then were Lazarus, Martha, and Mary. What was the connection between Simon and Lazarus, Martha, and Mary? No clue. Possibly they were married. Possibly he owned the home, let them use it. Possibly, I don't know. The best theory, I think he was their father. That's the one that at least seems to me the most likely to me. Because if you look at Bethany here, Jesus actually did quite a bit of ministry in Bethany, including the healing of the sick. Simon the leper was one that Jesus had healed, and perhaps it was through that event that Jesus came into contact with Lazarus, Mary, and Martha. Don't know the backstory here, but when you pick up in John chapter 11, Jesus is already very close to Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Three of them are siblings. And so then the text tells us in verse 2, it was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped her feet with hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. Verse 2 is kind of a way of saying this is who these people are. Now, Mary has not yet anointed the Lord's feet. That happens in chapter 12. Lazarus has yet to become ill. That happens later in the chapter. This is an identifying statement. Now, let me also say a couple of notes about Mary. If anybody would like a good homework assignment, go through the Gospels and make a chart of all of the different Marys. There's a bunch of them. There's Mary, Mary the wife of Clopas. There's Mary, the mother of Jesus. There is Mary, the aunt of Jesus. There's a bunch of Marys. Briefly, this Mary is Mary of Bethany. Okay, I'm going to give you just a real quick Mary notes. This is Mary of Bethany. If you want to do any research about her, that's how she's referred to. Mary of Bethany. Mary, as we'll read in a bit later, is the one who anoints the Lord's feet with oil and wipes it with her hair. She is not Mary Magdalene. Okay? This is very important to make note of. She is not Mary Magdalene. If you look in Luke chapter 8, verse 2, there is a Mary Magdalene who had been demon-possessed. Jesus heals her, and then she becomes his disciples. All of the gospel accounts give us some inclination. Some are much more explicit than others, like Mark 16, that Mary Magdalene was one of the first after the sight of the resurrection, and she then went and told others about it. That's Mary Magdalene. That Mary, by the way, was not a prostitute. That is a myth. There is nothing anywhere in all the Bible that says Mary Magdalene was a prostitute. This is the Mary that Ben's favorite author, Dan Brown, talks about. So the Da Vinci Code, all that nonsense about Mary Magdalene being the wife of Jesus and what the real arc was. People assumed, oh yeah, Jesus had to be married to this Mary who was a prostitute and healed her. That's hogwash. That Mary Magdalene, here's all that we know about her. She'd been demon-possessed. She was cleansed. She becomes a disciple of Jesus, and she's one of the first at the sight of the resurrection. That's about it. That's about it. That's Mary Magdalene, okay, who was not a prostitute. Not a prostitute. Mary of Bethany is a different Mary, okay? No connection at all to Mary of Magdalene. There are some that confound them in the crucifixion accounts about which Mary was there, but it was Mary Magdalene, okay? We're talking about Mary of Bethany. So I know that's really confusing, and it takes a lot of time to work through all these Marys. But here we're talking about Lazarus, Mary of Bethany, and Martha. Okay, now that we know who's who, it's confusing, isn't it? It's kind of like doing a family tree in Butler County and trying to figure out who John is. It's just like, come on. That's how it is with Mary in the Gospels. You're like, okay, there's a bunch of them. We're talking about Mary of Bethany. With all that said, why does she matter? Verse 3. So the sister sent to him saying, Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when Jesus heard of it, he said, the illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. So you'll note immediately what happens. Jesus already had some connection to Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Jesus loved Lazarus. And so they send word to him and say, Lord, he whom you love is ill. Now, what does this already tell us about Mary and Martha? They're believers. They're disciples. Perhaps they had seen the Lord heal their father. They have at least seen him do other miracles. And so they know our brother is ill. We had best be sending word to the Lord. Now, skip down to verse 17. Now, when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off. And many of the Jews who had come to Martha and to Mary to console them concerning their brother. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house. Now, already you're getting some about the personalities here. They hear word that Jesus is now on his way to Bethany after Lazarus has died. What happens? When they hear of this, there's people consoling them at their house. Martha leaves them, goes to meet Jesus, but Mary stays with the company. Who's the choleric? Who's the phlegmatic? I think we're already seeing some about this here. Now, generally, if you look at the order of the siblings, Martha is thought to be the oldest of the siblings, which I think makes sense the way she acts. But Martha is going out to meet Jesus to talk to him. Mary's staying with the company in the house. Verse 20. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." What do you note about Martha's account? Has Martha been listening to Jesus? Has Martha been watching Jesus? Has Martha been discipling Jesus? Of course she has. Martha knows that if there's anyone that has the power to bring her brother back, it's the Messiah. She is convinced of who Jesus is. "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would have not died. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he died, yet he shall live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world." Now, stop here. Understand where we are in the flow of Lazarus. Now, Grayson, the last time he was here, did the Lazarus singing. I preached on it the week after because John 11 is the climax of John 1 through 11. So many ways. Now, let me demonstrate this. Why was the Gospel of John written? These are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ. You remember our class from last year. These things are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ. Here's what's fascinating. As you go through the synoptic gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Peter is the one who makes the bold proclamation, "You are the Christ, the Son of God." Matthew 16, 18, verse probably many of us are familiar with. Peter's the one who makes that bold acclamation. John has been trying for the whole book to demonstrate to us that Jesus is the Christ. Who in the Gospel of John now comes out with the affirmation that you are the Christ, the Son of God? The very thesis that John has been trying to urge his believers toward for 11 chapters. Who now makes that proclamation? Martha said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into this world." Now, let me stop here. To this point in John, just think of John, is Martha portrayed as a busybody who doesn't want to be with the Lord and doesn't know who he is? Of course not. Martha's portrayed as a woman of action. She's portrayed of a woman of indignation. And she's portrayed of a woman of resolution. But she is a woman who knows who Jesus is. And it's interesting to me that here in John 11, which to this point is the climax of the book, the one who is going to make the affirmation, "You are the Christ, the Son of God," it's Martha. Martha. John saves that special account for Martha. So verse 28. Now, when he had said this, she went and called her sister Mary, saying in private, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And when she heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. Now, Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. Again, you're noting some about the personality differences here between Mary of Bethany and Martha. Martha is told, "The teacher's here, go see him." Well, she immediately gets up and goes, but she was still with her company. Martha hears that the Lord is coming. She goes out and meets him. She doesn't stay in the house and wait for him to come. She goes out and meets him. Verse 31. When the Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Now when Mary came to Jesus, to where he was, and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been there, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying?" Now, this is somewhat tangential, but I've always, since our study of John, been fascinated with that idea, Jesus wept. Jesus wept. Jesus was about to bring Lazarus back to life. But here's, I think, the point that John's really getting across. You remember in John 1, Jesus is described as the life that is, and the light even, that has come into the world. He is the creator. What's now happened when you get to John 11? The creator who gave life is now experiencing death firsthand. So what's the creator going to do? He's going to weep. Because the one who gave life is now seeing what death does. Jesus weeps. I think not only for Lazarus, but for all creation. Knowing what death has done and what the power of it leaves. Verse 38. Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Guess which sister gives an order? Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, by this time there will be an odor, for he has been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you would hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me." And when he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The man who had died came out, his hands and his feet bound with linen strips, and his face unwrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." Lazarus comes out. And the resurrection and the life have now come. Now, before we deal with chapter 12, where again we'll see Martha come up, I do want to make note of this. How would you describe Mary and how would you describe Martha? Okay, I'm not making analysis yet. I just want to make observation. Martha is the lion. She's the choleric. She is the Lord is coming. I'm going to meet him. The Lord is going to bring my brother back to life. Does he not know about the smell that's about to come? She is the practical. Get it done. Come on now. Mary's the one who is more quiet, more contemplative, and she's just enjoying being with company. Now, let me ask you, who's more religious? Martha, who wants to get it done? Or Mary, who wants to sit and weep and meditate? Who's more religious? Who's more religious? I want you to think on that question with me about 5 minutes. I'll answer it. Who's more religious? Martha or Mary? John 12, verse 1. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus therefore came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So they gave a dinner for him there. Martha served, surprise, surprise, and Lazarus was one of those reclining with him at table. Now, Matt pointed out last year, this is the first account in the Bible of a resurrected meal that the Lord himself is at. Powerful, isn't it? Emblems of resurrection. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of the ones reclining with him at table. Now, as Josh said last week with that dinner, we don't know here how many are there. You can imagine a few dozen. But Martha is here, the one serving. Now, is her service here a negative? Is this a bad thing? Of course not. Of course not. It said notably, the one who had come to the recognition that Jesus is Christ is now the one serving. It's a good thing. And then Mary steals the show. Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment made from her pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume, but Judas Iscariot, one of the disciples, he was about to betray him, said, "Well, why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?" He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief and having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Jesus said, "Leave her alone so that she may keep it for the day of my burial. For the poor you will always have with you, but you do not have me always." This story of Martha serving is not in all the Gospels. The account of Mary pouring out perfume is well documented. Matthew 26, Mark 14 give accounts of that, where Mary goes to her and pours oil on her feet and anoints, on his feet rather, and anoints him with perfume. So let me ask y'all this. What do we learn from Mary? What do we learn from Mary? Well, to answer that, keep everything from John in mind, but now go back with me to Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10. So, essentially what I'm going to argue is Martha is an exemplar, but also a warning for godly cholerics. Bruce taught this earlier this year. Cholerics are the doers, the ones who you got to get it done, the lions. Martha's a choleric. But I think she is an example for us both of godliness and also failures that especially choleric women can have. Luke 10, verse 38. Now, as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village. And a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had her sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving. And she went up to him and said, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not always be taken away from her." What did Martha choose? To be anxious rather than the good portion. Now, let's briefly talk about the righteousness here. The Lord's kingdom needs women like Martha. Women who are resolved. Women who understand what righteousness is and will go out to meet it. Women who are going to be intent about serving. Women who are doing good things, and the same for men. The church needs individuals who are going to be the servants and the initiators and get it done. Had Mary not had her older sister Martha, she may not have eaten dinner. I mean, the Lord's kingdom needs Marthas. The Lord's kingdom needs Marthas. But here's also the warning. The Lord's kingdom needs Marys. I can remember last year Thanksgiving, Jessica and I hosted Thanksgiving for our family last year, and Ben and a few others came over the night before to help. and Ben was getting some stuff ready, and Grayson was sitting at the bar, and he was just sitting there talking, and I handed him, I think it was a thing of apples, and said, here, chop these. And he started laughing. I said, what? He said, you just assumed I would prefer to be helping as opposed to just sitting here enjoying the company. I said, yes, I would get it done. That was just, it was just so instinctive for me. Idle hands are devil's work. I mean, you can get something done and chat away. I mean, you can talk and chop at the same time. I promise. I do it all the time. But that's the Martha syndrome. Is assuming you always have to be efficient. You always have to be getting something done. You always have to be focused on results. That's Martha syndrome. Is there a time for that? Absolutely. Consider the woman of Proverbs 31. She's industrious. She's productive. She sits by the gate. She makes clothing for her family in winter. She's not a lazy bone. She's efficient and productive. She's Martha. But there's a warning that goes with that as well. While there's a time to do, there's also a time to sit and listen. And this is where the beauty of Mary comes in. Now, a couple of details about the text I think are very important here to note. Look at verse 40. Martha was distracted with much serving and went up to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me. What here is Martha's problem? Was it that she was serving? No. The real problem, I think, here with Martha is she is more concerned about her sister's supposed laziness than she is her own attitude. I think one of the chief things we have to gain from the story of Mary and Martha is the need for introspection. Stop trying to be the Pharisee who's looking out for the condemnation of everyone else and be the tax collector who understands my own failings. That's what Martha doesn't get. Martha has the audacity, and it doesn't surprise me at all. She has the audacity to go to Jesus and say, she's doing nothing, you need to tell her to help me. Lord then takes the opportunity to tell her, verse 41, Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion. Now, two other notes about this story, and I'm going to close up. Number one, the story of Mary and Martha has to be understood contextually. When should we be the Mary who is sitting and listening and meditating? And when should we be the Martha who is doing and serving? If you look immediately before this in Luke chapter 10, the parable of the Good Samaritan, what does Jesus tell the Samaritan to do? He says at the very end of it, verse 37, the lawyer answered, the one who showed mercy. And Jesus said to him, you go and do likewise. So who here is the one who is doing good? The one who is doing good is the one who is doing, the one who is showing mercy, the one who is acting. That's the one who's doing good. But then what's interesting is, immediately after this is the story of Mary and Martha with the supposed takeaway, don't do but listen. So are we to be the good Samaritan who is doing and serving and showing mercy? Or are we to be the Mary who is sitting and listening at the feet of Jesus? And nearly with all things, you all will know my answer. It's wisdom that's necessary. Wisdom is necessary here. Especially when it comes to the religious life, we can get in one of two ruts. We can either be the Mary who is just listening. And that's all we want to do. Just come and listen. Just sit and listen. There's a time for that, right? To listen to the scriptures, to listen to sermons, to listen to singing, to listen to instruction, all of that has its proper place. But there's others who don't want to sit and listen to the scriptures. All they want to do is get out and help and serve. That's great. There's a time for that. And we need to be about doing good things, those little things for the kingdom. We need to be doing righteous acts of mercy, showing good things and serving others. But it has to be done in light of listening to scripture. Our religion must not be one typified only by listening, nor by serving. It must be one that integrates the listening of the scripture and the service of God and others. And that's, I think, the real lesson here from Mary and Martha. is there is a time to be the Good Samaritan, going and doing merciful things. And there's times to be a Mary, sitting and listening. But at all times, be the Martha who has the faith to know you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. That's, I think, the story of Mary and Martha. Last observation before I close. Verse 42, Mary has chosen the good portion. Mary has chosen the good portion. What is this good portion? Well, as with anything, Garrett, where are we going to find the answer? In the Old Testament. This is a phrase that is very, very, very commonly used in the Old Testament. Let me show you just one example. Go back to Psalm 16. Look back to Psalm 16. As you work through both Deuteronomy and Numbers, this phrase of the good portion is used many, many times. Look at Psalm 16, verse 5. Psalm 16, verse 5. The Lord is my chosen portion and my cup. You hold my lot. The lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Indeed, I have a beautiful inheritance. What is the chosen portion, the good portion? The Lord. And you'll notice here this idea of the chosen portion and the cup. The Lord is my sustenance. That's probably a better way to say it. The Lord is my sustenance. Here's the point. Mary had decided to eat of the bread of life. Martha was too concerned about making physical bread. Choose the bread of life. Choose the good portion. So let's bring all this together. What do we learn from Martha? Well, I think the Gospel of John portrays Martha as a righteous, righteous woman. She teaches, be convicted. Have a firm faith. Know what you believe and be willing to act for it. Serve. Look out for others. So many lessons there that Martha teaches us. But what does the story in Luke remind us? It reminds us that yes, while God's people should be about action, it should never be at the expense of listening to the words of the Scripture. Our lives should be centered around listening to Scripture, eating of the good portion, and using that sustenance to go out and serve the world. And when we have the wisdom to have a merry heart in a Martha world, as some of you may have read the book, I think a better title to that book is, when we have the wisdom to know when to be merry and know when to act like Martha, such is when we will find the good portion. All right, you can be getting your songbooks out at this time. So I hope you at least have a deeper appreciation for Martha. I will admit, honestly, until we studied through John last year, I had always viewed Martha as a busybody who didn't care anything about spiritual matters. And the Gospel of John just demonstrates a much more complete view of Martha. That yes, she teaches us the pitfalls of busyness, but she also teaches us what it means to be a righteous woman. And so many good lessons we learn there from Martha. Don't you love that phrase? She has chosen the good portion. She has chosen the good portion. Can you imagine one day us feasting around the table of the Lord, feasting on the good portion? Martha's probably going to make sure everything's cooked to the right temperature. But it's going to be a wonderful day. We're like Lazarus, all of those who have been resurrected to new life are going to be in the kingdom of God, feasting on the good portion, being sustained for all of eternity. What a great day it'll be. Obviously, to do that, you have to put off the old man, put on the new, and in obedient faith come to him. If anyone needs to respond to the Lord's invitation, come forward as we stand and sing.